Hey yo, what's up everyone? Welcome to the TJTV podcast, only on Spotify and Google Podcasts. We have a busy week ahead of us today. I have two interviews coming up, one with Joe Mass, who I absolutely enjoy. Joe actually used to come in for one of the radio shows that we had at the station I work at, and he would just sit in constantly, and we would just talk, and he told me a lot of stories, so I figured, you know, why not have him on the show? It's a really, you know, he's a really interesting dude, really great guy, and I just really wanted to have him on the show. So he came on the show, and we chatted for about 30 minutes, which is awesome. And the cool part was, as well, he gave me two songs, and he said, hey, you can play the full version of the songs that I gave you. You could either play one during the show, before the show, or after the show. So I'm going to do him a solid. And on Spotify, I know they're very weird with music, and I know they might cancel me for this, but hey, I'm going to do it for Joe. I'm going to play one of his songs before the interview, and this song is a really good one. Here is Paris Nights, only on TJTV. It's been a long time, but I'm with Joe Mass, who I've known for, we've known for a little bit, actually, like a little under a year.
Yep.
How you doing?
TJ, I guess it's been a couple years, you know? We've known each other. So I'm real happy to do this. Thank you so much for having me. And we're finally getting around to doing this, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember you would tell me a lot of, like, you did karate, and then you're also a guitar player, which the first song that we played was Paris Nights in the beginning of the show, and then we'll play the next song after the interview, but let's start off with, like, the very beginning, like, how you started. Like, did you do karate first? Were you a guitarist first? How did
No, I mean, for me, I've been a guitar player all my life. I play guitar. I play piano. I play violin. I play saxophone. I play bass. And I touch a little bit on the drums, too. But basically, I'm a guitarist and a pianist. I mean, guitar first, piano second, saxophone. I'm a good actor. I make you think I'm a good player, but I'm not. I'm just a good actor on saxophone, so. But I have played on my recordings that I've done. I play a little saxophone on records too. So how it started, you know, I mean, I guess it started like any other kid. I had some lessons on guitar, and then I just kind of taught myself, and then I got serious about it. You know, karate came much, much later in life. So that wasn't even a thought, you know. I mean, I don't really even do much karate anymore because all I do is tour and play guitar and, you know, do what I do. So,
who were your inspirations growing up?
Oh, that's a great question. I guess my inspirations are pretty much a lot of different people. It's my little dog growling and barking. Anyway, my inspirations run the gamut from Wes Montgomery, Pat Martino, Dwayne Allman, Dickie Betts, Eddie Van Halen, Yngwie Malmsteen. I mean, I'm all over the place. I think to be like a great player and to be a good musician, you have to be able to absorb it all. You know, you have to be able to take a little bit out of every player and out of every genre and really kind of soak that in, and then you develop your own style from that.
Right.
So that's what I've done. I developed my own style from listening to many different players and drawing on their influences too. And of course the blues. I love the blues. So Muddy Waters is an influence, definitely. Johnny Winter is definitely a big influence too. His live record, Johnny Winter, and I wore that record out, CD and everything else. I mean, I just love that record. I play it all the time, and it's on YouTube too. So you can listen to every song on YouTube anymore, you know. And nobody makes any money, unfortunately, because of that. But yeah.
No, that's a true fact. I mean, even with TikTok, like you can post whatever on TikTok, original music or whatever, and they don't even make.
Yeah, you don't really make anything. You have to tour and you have to sell merchandise and you have to be really proactive in, getting yourself out there on all social media, but you can't make any money selling records. But I think like I'm signed to a record deal and we're still actually waiting for distribution. I have a record deal, but my company is waiting to sign a distribution deal with a major. So that's the only way to, once you get that going, then possibly, you get a publicist, you start to get airplay if you get the right connections with, radio, and that fuels people coming to your shows. Because you still can't, unless you sell 50, 60, 70 million records, then you can make something from streaming. But you can, I mean, you could stream 400,000, 500,000, and you don't make a lot of money. So you
Right.
got to go out and play. That's the name of the game today. You have to concert. You have to do concerts.
Have you ever gotten your music played on the radio?
Yeah, I mean, I'll put it this way, like I'm on some records. I'm on Bootsy Collins's records, and his stuff gets played under the Mascot label. I did Worldwide Funk. I did a bunch of other stuff with him. I did some Snoop Dogg stuff. So I get played on the radio. My compositions and my original music, I've gotten some airplay with my EMI release, but that was 10 years ago. And now I made these two other records. The one that I made specifically kind of like a pop record that featured a lot of guitar stuff. And so it was kind of like Santana's Supernatural record. That's the one record that we kind of patterned what I did after. And so it's kind of like there's y real young singers on it on five cuts, and then there's four cuts where I just kind of shred and do my thing in like a funk fusion-y kind of way. And that's what I gave you one. I gave you Silver Linings to play, and that's on the pop-ish record, okay? And then there's another record that I made with I have this bass player who lives in LA, and he's on the first record that I did. I'm getting all confused there. The first record I did has I have the percussionist from Jimi Hendrix's band when he did Woodstock. He's on that record. His name is Gerardo Valles. I have Billy Sheehan from David Lee Roth's band. He's playing bass. Jimmy Haslip is playing bass on that record. Gary Hoey's playing guitar. Greg Kock is playing guitar. Chris Gordon, friend of mine, is playing guitar. So I have all these different kind of stars on that record. And then so Jimmy said, "Why don't we make a jazz record?" And so he said, "Do you have any jazz songs?" So I sent him 10 songs and he picked six out of that and we made another record. And that's strictly the jazz record. And that's Paris Nights is on that record. And that record has Jimmy Haslip, Dave Weckl playing drums, Randy Brecker's playing trumpet. There's Gary Novak's playing drums from Chick Corea's band. Then I have different people producing it. Scott Kinsey, who played with Tribal Tech and Miles Davis, he's playing keyboards and helping out with stuff. Jeff Lorber wrote me a song, and Jeff's on it. And my cousin Eric Scattereggia played drums on it too. And basically co-produced it along with Jimmy Haslip. And I'm playing guitar and saxophone. Andy Snitzer plays saxophone on stuff. And there's others that, you know, it's like chock full of the jazz guys on the other record. And so I'm waiting for both records to actually get out there. Nothing's released yet. So I gave you like unreleased tracks, but I don't care. You know, it's all good.
Well, it's something that's like happening. It's coming up for you, which is a really exciting thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if people dig it and like I'm on tour right now. I'm home for a couple of days. On Thursday, I go to Dallas for a week, Texas for a week, and I'm playing that with Jimmy Haslip, Jeff Lorber, Eric Scattereggia. Then on Saturday, I play another show, and that's with Skunk Baxter's bass player. Mike G is playing that show with me, and Joey D, a friend of mine, is playing percussion. My cousin Eric's playing drums. And then we get back from Texas, and then I have a couple days off, and I fly to New Orleans for a concert, and that's all Allman Brothers material. And I'm playing that with, let's see, who's on that bill? Taz Niedermeyer, or I forget his last name. This young guy playing guitar, he's really good. And Wet Willie is going to be there, the old Southern rock band. And that's in New Orleans. Then come back, and then there's a whole other tour that starts 4 days after that. And so I'm going the whole month of May. And then come back, and, you know, I'm actually doing another jazz record. And we're right in the middle. My cousin and I, Eric, are right in the middle of the beginning recording of that. And that's going to be called Philadelphia. And it's going to be about all the great jazz players in Philadelphia that we have. And Jimmy Haslip's going to produce that one too, but he lives in LA. But I'm getting all the great players from Philly to play on that record. And that's it. That's, you're kind of up to date.
And music's your full time too, right?
Yeah. That's all I do is music. Yeah.
So like, it's just from you touring a lot. That's how, like, that makes it your full time from touring a lot, or?
Okay, so I guess the question really is, how do you make money as a musician, right?
Yeah, I guess.
How do you support yourself? What do you do? Well, you have to do a little bit of everything if you're not famous. Okay, if you're famous and you have multiple records out and you have a track record and people know you, then you can play shows and sell records and do that. But if you're like me, so I do two tribute bands. I do this band called Broken Arrow, and it's a tribute to Neil Young. So I'm the Neil Young guy in the band. And then I do Live at the Fillmore, which is a tribute to the original Allman Brothers band. And I play guitar and sing in that band. And that's, we have six pieces in that band, and we play all over the country. In both of those tribute bands, we go all over the place. Then I do my own thing where I play more of a fusion style thing. And I do that with Jimmy Haslip, Jeff Lorber, Eric Scattereggia, Mike G. And that, there's that whole group of people. And then I'll do singles where I'll go into a place. I have this app on my phone called iReal Pro, and I'll plug into a little PA. I'll take my guitar out and play standards for like 3 hours and get paid doing that. Then I teach a little bit. I do a lot of studio work. I'm working with this guy, West Coast Stone, in LA. Actually, no, he's in Seattle. And so I'm doing a bunch of recording for him. And whatever Bootsy gives me, I recorded a lot with Bootsy Collins. I was his guitar player for 15 years. And, you know, I played at NAMM, the National Annual Musical Merchants Show in California. I did that. I did that for Fender, for DeAndrea Products. You know, I played a lot of shows around in the Los Angeles area, and a lot of shows here on the East Coast. So it's a potpourri of different things that you have to do to make a living in music. Yeah. You know? Go ahead.
No, it seems like a lot. That's what I'm saying. Like, it seems like a lot of things you have to do.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's one of those things where you really can't turn down a gig. You know, you have to just, like, you keep it going, and then you meet a new guy, and maybe he has a gig for you. Maybe you do a wedding ceremony here, because I can play violin. So sometimes I would play violins on wedding ceremonies, you know, or I'd play piano for somebody's cocktail hour. It's just, you just got to keep it going. Or I'm going to play casino. Like, I got two casino gigs at the end of May in Atlantic City. And that's like top 40 stuff, Bruno Mars and Lizzo and everything that, you know, all the new stuff that's out today. So you got to be up on all that. It never ends. I'm always practicing for something. Right now I'm practicing. I just did this 4-hour rehearsal this morning for the show in Texas. Now I'm doing this with you. Then I'll get off get off this call, and then I'll call West Coast Stone and see what he's doing in Seattle, and you know, I got to talk to him. He's producing one of my songs too, so it's like never ends.
I've had the same experience today. Like, I had a meeting at 1 o'clock, then I have this at 3, then I had to go. I'm picking up my wife at after she's done around like 4:30, 5 o'clock, and then I have another meeting at 8 o'clock. So it's like never ending, like you said.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing is. You know, I know all your recordings and podcasts like this are doing so well. I follow you, and of course we're friends on all the social media sites, so I see it all. And you're doing amazing stuff, man. I'm honored to have a spot on your show.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I started this 9 years ago. It will be 9 years in June, and from when I started at a very young age, I was like 20. To like now, like I evolved so much from what I wanted to be when I was first starting out.
That's great, man. And you deserve it too. You know, I've watched you work in the radio station, and you're a very meticulous person. So I know all this, when you edit stuff and do stuff, it's going to be like perfect. So pretty cool.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's the thing. I never thought I would actually be editing, like doing all that stuff. Cause like, when I first got into radio, before I got really involved, I thought it was just you walk in and that's it. Yeah. I didn't put all this technical side to it until I got there. And no, I mean,
yeah, it was pretty technical.
Yeah. It's a dream job for me too. I mean, it was something I've always wanted to do, but you know.
It's great. It's great, man. More power to you, man. It's great.
Yeah, so yeah, no. what was I about to ask you? How did karate get started for you?
Okay, so karate happened because a really close friend of mine was a blues guitar player, okay? And then he got really immersed into martial arts. And when he did that, then he's like, you should check this out. This is really, it's great exercise, you know, because we both share that. Yeah. So it's like great. It's tremendous exercise. It's, you know, just as you work your way up through the system, I'm going to call it, because belts are different in every different form of martial arts. But as you work your way up to it, you know, there's 96 katas to get to black belt in Okinawan karate. And then there's something different in jiu-jitsu, something different in judo. You know, there's all these different art forms. So he inspired me to start taking martial arts. And I learned early on, I mean, the most important belt that you have, that you can earn, is your first belt, your white belt. I learned that really as I got into class. I'm like, okay, so how do we do this? And the sensei walked me through a couple of things, and he said, it's a commitment. This is what your white belt means. It means you are committed to studying this art. So that was the most important thing, is to make that commitment of your time and effort on that day. I learned a lot from Stuart. My sensei Stuart, he started another karate school in Coatesville. He had a dojo and Stuart's Fight Club. So there were two different like forms of martial arts that Stuart was doing, and also he would teach you how to fight with weapons too. So he was an expert at the sword, expert at any type of firearm. He was an expert at all that. I didn't do any of that, but unfortunately, he ran into some trouble, and I'm still in touch with him, but he's not doing karate anymore right now. Possibly at a later date, he will be. I think you and I discussed that too. I think you and I talked about that before, but I'd rather not say what it was on social media.
Yeah, that's fine.
But he'll be back at some point.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, I kind of ran in. So I had a similar, it's not karate, but it's something similar with radio. I was working for an internet radio company, and the guy, he got into some trouble, which cost me losing a job because everyone else lost their job too. But no, I know how it feels when you like something and then it just goes away because of something like that.
Well, what it was for me was losing my sensei. Because Stuart was much more than just a physicality teacher. He was a mentor in many ways for me. So losing that was difficult for me. Yes. As it was for many of his other people who studied under him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it isn't. Karate is an art form, and with the art form, it's not only the physicality, but it's also the mentality and how you think and how you approach life. There's all of those lessons that you can get from ancient Chinese teaching, ancient Japanese teaching. So that's all I can say about that.
How long have you
say
well,
again?
How long have you done karate for?
Well, I still do it, although I'm not in any type of shape to, I put it this way, I couldn't really spar with anybody or do anything like that. I could still defend myself, but I don't look at it that way. I look at it more as a zen for me. So I do have a great friend who is a 6-degree grand master who runs all of the karate schools in a certain karate school, all of them in the United States and in England, Africa, and one other country I can't think of.
Wow.
He does them all. And he's a really good friend of mine.
I would love to have that guy on the show. I'm sure he would have some good stories.
Oh, well, once again, he's more of a teacher, so.
Yeah, no, that's his thing. That's his thing. I would say when I went to karate, my instructor, he told me his master was actually taught by Chuck Norris back in the day.
You told me that. I remember you telling me that, yeah.
And that was a pretty cool story, but I mean, I'm like you. I haven't done anything physical when it comes to karate, so like I probably can't spar anymore, but I can defend myself if push came to shove,
It's funny because we were on tour in Florida, and my bass player, I said, okay, he said, show me a couple things. I'm like, okay, So, I said, come at me. And so, like, he came at me. I had him on the ground in like less than half a second. And I had to catch him as he fell. But I know that move. So you basically, I'm left-handed. So I use my left leg. I lead that way. So if you wrap your leg around, like if he's standing, so he's standing this way, I'm on the other side of him. So I wrap my left leg around his leg and I threw him down. But I had my hand on his back, so I caught him as he was falling. He went,
Yeah.
whoa. I'm like, it's like, hey. That's, it was funny.
You're
He said,
left.
don't do that again, okay? I'm like, okay.
You're left-handed though?
I'm left-handed. I play guitar right-handed though.
Really?
But yeah, when I was a kid, like I had this teacher, TJ, and I was all set to take my lesson. So I'm holding the guitar like this, right? I'm like, all right, I'm ready. Right? And the guy came in and went, oh no, I can't teach you like that. I said, yeah, but I'm left-handed. He goes, no, you're not. Turn it around. So I turned it around like this. He was yelling at me, and so I'm right-handed on guitar, that's for sure.
My
I throw right-handed, right? If I'm throwing a baseball, if I'm shooting a basketball, I shoot left-handed. If I throw football, I throw left-handed. If I throw a baseball, I throw right-handed and bat left though. So
they're like anti-pec-des. I can't even pronounce the word.
ambidextrous,
Ambidextrous.
kind of, not wholeheartedly, but kind of,
My wife. Well, when she was growing up, she was left-handed, but her grandmother said, "No, we're not having left-handed people in our family." So she made her right-handed because
Yeah,
she
it's
was
a
old.
religious thing, right?
Yeah.
It was a religious thing, right? Yeah, I remember when I was in grade school, somebody said that too. You must write with your right hand. I'm like, no, I'm left-handed, and I wouldn't change. I'm like, I'm writing with my left hand. So either like it or you don't. I'm not changing. That was it.
Yeah, well, that's how I am. I mean, I'm left-handed, and everybody thought it was weird because I was the odd man out.
Yeah. Well, left-handed people, left-handed people, I think are more creative. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, no, I mean, I work in a creative industry, so yeah,
Yeah.
say
All
that
right.
worked in my favor, and it worked in your.
Cool.
So it
Say it
worked in. I
again.
want to say it worked in your favor too.
It did. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely worked in my favor. So cool.
Yeah, so you have anything else you want to plug before we get out of here?
No, man. I mean, thank you so much. I want to plug you. TJ Gleason, thank you so much for having me on. I'm glad we finally got to do it. And you guys out there can listen to my music. I'm just gonna play. Did you play one already? Or we're gonna play one, right? At the beginning of the show and at the end of the show. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, listen to the music and hopefully you'll comment and like the stuff and rock and roll. Everybody's good.
I'll share this. It will come out, should come out tomorrow at some point around 5 o'clock.
Terrific, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon, TJ.
Talk to you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Right, that's going to wrap up today's episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I'll be back tomorrow. If you are new, make sure you smash like on Spotify and Google Podcasts, anchor.fm. Also, go check out Unexplainable. New episode's coming out at 5 o'clock today, or I'm sorry, 3 o'clock today. So yeah, hopefully you enjoy that. And next week we have more episodes of Unexplainable. Like I said, I'm doing a lot of stuff over like behind the scenes and pretty much just in the radio world and podcast world. There's a lot of things I have planned, and I hope you enjoy it. So, yeah, see you guys soon. Goodbye, everybody.